Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting from Portola Valley, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today's show is going to air on February 15th, 2008. Well, hello, everybody. I'm recording this in January, but you're going to be listening to this in February. So happy Valentine's Day. The day this airs is the day after Valentine's Day. And, you know, I got to thinking about that, how Valentine's Day is, well, I guess Mother's Day and Father's Day are a bit like this, but Valentine's Day specifically celebrates love. And in our crazy world, boy, we could sure use a lot more love. And in a way, you know, love is the answer. All you need is love, as the Beatles say. I really do believe that our love can go a long way to healing our children. I talk about this in my book, how homeopathy can be a trigger for healing, but love, our intention, our love for our children is also an incredibly important force in their healing, and I don't think you should underestimate it. Your love, your intent, your energy can create the space in which your child can heal. And without that, it's going to be much harder for your child to heal. So it's critical. In fact, the love, I think, between your family members and you, if there's some space for your child where there's really a very safe, loving environment, that will create the best environment for your child to heal. And in fact, that's true for all of us. I mean, it's true for all of us. It's going to be much harder for anyone to heal of anything if they're living in an environment where they can't relax and feel loved and nourished. So, I really think it's wonderful, you know, that we have a holiday to celebrate love. So we should really focus more on that, on the meaning of Valentine's Day, than on what we get from our loved ones, rather, you know, than on chocolate and flowers and cards and decorations. And really, we should focus more on what it means, how important love is in the world. It really is so important to celebrate love in our world, especially it seems today, these days, when the world is just crazier than ever, you know. Anyway, today's show is going to be really a nice one. It's another interview show with a very wonderful homeopath who's done a lot for homeopathy in the world, Miranda Castro. And probably a lot of you have heard of her because she's written some best-selling books on homeopathy. But before I get to introducing her, we'll get down to the usual business of the show, beginning business, which is to tell you about how to find out more about homeopathy. As many of you know, this show is based on my book, which is called Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. And you can find out more about how to order the book by going to impossiblecure.com. And on that page, you'll find lots of information. There's an autism page. At the bottom of that page is a set of referral lists to homeopaths in general. It's not just for people seeking help for autism, but general referral lists to homeopaths. On the site is also the annotated archives of the show, and I do encourage all of you who are just tuning in for the first time to go back and listen to 3 years of shows of There's Hope with Homeopathy, this show, because it really is like a short course about homeopathy based on this book. So just go to impossiblecure.com. On the right side, there's a link to the annotated archives, complete archives of this show. On the ImpossibleCure.com website is also the Cure Stories database, where you can read some inspirational stories of people who found healing with homeopathy. And I really encourage any of you to contribute your story, large or small, to the database, because it really is a good deed. It helps it really does help people, encourage people to try homeopathy. So you would be helping another child, another family by contributing your success with homeopathy. You can also find out how to order Impossible Cure in bulk and get a discount on the site. And finally, feel free to email me anytime with any questions or ideas for the show. You can just send an email to Lansky@ImpossibleCure.com or through the Autism One organization to alansky@autismone.org. Of course, all the emails just go to the same place, so it doesn't matter where you email me. Oh, yeah, just one more piece of news. Just this week, very exciting, the next translation of Impossible Cure just came out in Greek. I'm going to be, by the time this airs, there'll be a link to the Greek edition on ImpossibleCure.com. So now, in addition to English, you can buy Impossible Cure in German and in Greek. And I've signed a contract last year, for an Arabic translation, and that will appear sometime in 2009, is my guess. Takes a long time for those things to happen. So pretty soon there'll be three translations of Impossible Cure. So, before I go on to today's show, I want to tell you about next month's show. Next month's show is going to be about the doctrine of signatures, a very intriguing and almost mystifying part of homeopathy. This discussion will be based on Chapter 5 of Impossible Cure, so if any of you want to read up before listening, read Chapter 5. One other announcement is that in April is the annual joint homeopathy conference, national conference. It's going to be happening in Rhode Island this year, near Warwick, Rhode Island, but just outside of Providence, Newport, all that. So if you live in that area, please consider coming to the national conference. You can find out all about it by going to the National Center for Homeopathy website, which is nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. And in fact, this year the structure is a little different. For those of you who are newbies, on Saturday there's a standalone one-day introduction to homeopathy conference that you can register for. And I think it's only $100, a whole day workshop with excellent teachers. So you might be interested in going to that if you can get to Rhode Island. And that conference, well, you can find all the details at the National Center for Homeopathy website. I think the dates are something like April 12th, 13th, I'm not sure. So let's move on to today's interview with Miranda Castro. Let me do a little introduction of her for you. Miranda is a fellow of the Society of Homeopaths in the UK, and you'll hear her wonderful British accent when she gets on. And she's also a CCH, a Certified Classical Homeopath in the United States. And she's been in the United States for many years. She's been practicing homeopathy for 25 years and teaching and speaking on both sides of the Atlantic for 20 years. And she's done so much for homeopathy. When I first got involved with homeopathy, she was the president of the North American Society of Homeopaths for many years, and she really was one of our guiding lights. She's also the author of several best-selling books about homeopathy, especially the Complete Homeopathy Handbook, which, if you want a how-to book with description of many remedies, this is really the book to buy. I myself still use it. It's much loved in the homeopathic world. Also, there's Pregnancy, Birth, and Your Baby's First Years, a how-to book for when you're pregnant and have a small child, and The Homeopathic Guide to Stress as well. She believes passionately that homeopathy is medicine for the people, and so her writing reflects that. She has written books that have made classical homeopathy spectacularly accessible to lay people, because she gives people the tools to accurately and safely select healing remedies for themselves and for their families. She moved to the United States in 1994, so she's been here a while, and she currently lives in Gainesville, Florida, where she is practicing as well as teaching seminars. And she says she's also planting an edible subtropical garden. Kind of cool. So you can find out all about Miranda, her books, and her practice by going to her website, which is mirandacastro.com. MirandaCastro.com. So, without further ado, let me go and bring on Miranda Castro. Okay, we got Miranda Castro. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, Amy. It's lovely to speak to you today.
It's great to have you here, and I know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have even owned one of your books.
There's quite a few of them out there. I think the handbook has sold about 250,000 at this point.
Oh, my God!
I know.
Wow.
But that is nearly 20 years it's been in print, and in England, about tens of thousands have sold to the book clubs. So, I mean, I'm not a wealthy woman on this, but a lot of people have been introduced to homeopathy through my book. I'm really gratified by that.
Wow. I got to get linked. We got to link up my book to your book. Then I'll sell more.
Hey, that's a spirit.
So I always, you know, whenever I have a homeopath on, I always begin by asking them how they got into homeopathy, and I think it's really interesting. So why don't you start by telling us about that?
Well, my family used it. You know, I grew up with it, and I've always had a first aid kit wherever I've lived. You know, I've lived in France for a couple of years, and that's all. It was a whole group of us. None of us ever needed a doctor. We just went to our little kit and our little guidebooks. And then as an adult, I actually trained as an acupuncturist. And at the end of my training, my son was born. And he, as a baby, 6 months old, he got whooping cough. And with all my skills as an acupuncturist, I couldn't help him. And with the information that I had, what I knew about homeopathy, didn't really help him deeply enough. I couldn't get him well. He just kept relapsing. And we went to one homeopath after another. Actually, it was the fourth homeopath who we didn't give up, interestingly. The fourth homeopath was not a keynote prescriber. He was a classical homeopath. And in treating Daniel's whole picture, he got him well within a week. He'd stopped vomiting overnight, and the cough disappeared within the week. And so I had a very direct experience of three homeopaths who were doing keynote prescribing. They were all, you know, doing their best, but they didn't understand how to use homeopathy deeply or well enough to get a good cure in someone who was not doing well at all, who was relapsing, who had an inherited block, if you like, and needed more than the obvious remedies. And so when I saw that, you know, when you see a child, when you have a direct experience of wellness, either your own or your own child, it's very impressive. And I had to, at that point, I understood from the inside out that what real homeopathy was all about, and I had to do a training, and I did.
And boy, that's how many of us became homeopaths because of our kids.
Yes, exactly.
So like you've been practicing for many years. You practiced in England for several years first?
Yeah, I'm a British homeopath, I've been practicing for 25 years, and I got a little mad about the first aid books that I had been using for so many years when I understood how homeopathy really worked, and that's why I wrote the handbook, which is basically scales down what I do, what the professional homeopath does in the consulting room, and makes that accessible to the home prescriber. And it's been pretty successful. People get good results from it. And
I have one myself. I've used it. I still use it.
Okay. Yeah. I do too. When I go away, I take it with me. It's very cute.
Yeah.
It works.
So tell us about your practice, sort of like what kind of people you treat in your practice, and I know you've treated a few autistic kids too. Tell us.
I have. Because I have a special interest in women and babies and children, inevitably, you know, I've got lots of those in my practice. But you know what? They come, I get every shape, size, color, sex, and I mean every. So I have, you know, I don't think there's anything I don't see. All the way from birth to old age to death, really, you know, and everything in between. I love working with kids. They're always very fun, you know, very interesting to work with. And usually they're, especially the babies, you know, that you can just see the new lives developing, growing into themselves, and it's a little spirits evolving. It's always a special treat to see the babies.
In a way, you can do the most with babies and children because you can put them on the right path right from the very beginning.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And you know what's and I learned this in my first year in practice. I had a lot of families. My practice was mainly local families because of the community. I was working in a suburb in London, and I worked with another homeopath, and I saw all the families in that homeopath practice. And so I had big families. Some mothers brought in 3, 4, 5, 6 children, and it was startling how the difference between the kids that started out with homeopathy from birth and the ones that didn't. There was every mother said so. There was a big difference in their children's health and well-being and ability to withstand stress, and it's just all the basics that the kids who'd been treated with homeopathy from the get-go, they were much better shape.
So you know that most of the people who listen to this show have an autistic child, so
right.
This is on autism. Although I must say people do listen to the show, you know, who just go to my book website as well, so other people do too. But so tell us a bit about your practice with autistic children in particular. I am curious, since you've worked with so many kids, if you were seeing problems with vaccine damage even before, you know, the whole autism epidemic, you know, hit, and
right.
Just what your perspective on, you know.
I know, because there's a lot of discussion now, and the scientists are saying, well, the increase in numbers is just due to increased reporting. I don't think that can be true. I certainly didn't see, and I was alert to it, I didn't see autistic children in my practice before 10 years ago. Not the odd one, but not like now, every other kid, something like that. It's very high now. Or every third child, maybe, that I see is either ADD or autistic or, you know, a combination of both. They often go together. And so I don't think it's the vaccines.
You mean you don't think it's just reporting?
I don't think it's because of increased reporting, and I don't think the autism epidemic is due to vaccinations.
Oh, you don't?
Alone.
Huh. Alone. So I'm curious, what do you have any ideas? Because most people...
I have ideas.
Yeah, I'm curious, so, what do you think?
And I think actually the scientists who are really studying this, terrible epidemic. I mean, it's heartbreaking, literally heartbreaking to see so many children damaged in this way and know that their whole lives are going to be very hard work for themselves, for work, for their relationships, for their families. It's really tough on everybody. So I have had children in who weren't vaccinated, who were autistic. They set me on the path of trying to say, okay, if not vaccinations, then what? And the scientists who are looking at this are saying now that it has to be multifactorial. That means there are many factors at work and we don't really know. And this is purely speculation on my part, but I've now started asking. And in 90% of the kids, there's one that I've seen that one or more parent has a history of drug use.
Huh.
Specifically cocaine.
Cocaine?
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, you know, cocaine is endemic now. I mean, it's in use by not just young people, but a lot of professions.
So when you say a history, you mean not just using it once, but like a real user of cocaine?
Yes, I think, yeah. I mean, I haven't approached, and there is a little bit of research out there to show that that is a factor in the doctors, the scientists, the researchers, if you like, who are studying this have noticed that also. I looked it up once I found that.
Huh.
My own practice.
Although that hasn't been my experience. I mean, it wasn't true in my family. But
right. Like you said, 90%. And so then, you know, our environment is so contaminated now. The chemicals that are in our environment that weren't there 100 years ago, it's so enormous. And especially the hormones, the estrogens or the ones that affect those, it's so enormous, it's got to be a factor.
Right. Some people have talked about cell phones as well. Have you thought about that?
I've thought about it. I don't know, is the answer. So
yeah.
I hate cell phones, personally. So it would delight me no end to find out that they were bad. So they're a convenience, but I cannot abide the speaking on them all the time that, you know, that people do. They're like tied to, connected all the time. And
as far as, in my view, it's vaccines may, you know, I've always felt that was the major factor, but it could be also toxins. For example, I personally used to have something like 11 mercury fillings, silver fillings. And I often wonder about that, too. So there's, you know, there's mercury that can be in the mother's system, for example, even if
right.
the kid isn't vaccinated.
Right.
Yes, you're right. It's many things. It's many things.
And, I mean, this is a stretch right now. But
yeah.
If once you add it in, the big load, the toxic load becomes... it becomes hard to withstand. So the stretch is, and it's more prevalent, I do believe, in this country than anywhere else. People are now drenching their bodies in chemicals that we haven't used on our bodies ever before. I'm talking about shampoos, soaps, moisturizers, hair dyes, especially dyes and hair products, some of which are neurotoxic, or many of which have chemicals in them that are neurotoxic, the room fresheners or the household care products that are highly suspect. I mean, people, we can't change the air we breathe, but I do, as a general bottom line, I do advise people to strip their homes. You know, just use the simplest of products that work.
It's really hard to find. I was just looking for a hand lotion that didn't have all that junk in it. And even the ones that were more natural had things like evening primrose oil or something that was estrogenic. It's very hard to find.
Right.
So you
go back to basics. I mean,
put olive oil on your hands.
Just a little oil. It's a little greasy, or, you know, shea butter on its own is brilliant.
Yeah. So
So anyway, tell us about, if you have a family with an autistic child come in, what's their first appointment like? How do they prepare? What's that first experience like for them?
Hopefully it's pleasant. You know, toys for the kids, and usually everyone piles in, and if we need to, we sit on the floor in order to make the kid feel comfortable, depending on how old they are. And homeopaths, we ask a lot of questions, and so I'm always attentive to what the experience is like for them, how they're interacting with me as a stranger, with their parents, what they're actually doing, what the behavior is, and I'm interested in whether the behavior is normal or out of the ordinary. And, you know, we're symptom sleuths. That is to say, as a homeopath, I'm always most interested in what's unusual about this child, this autistic child, or this child with anything for that matter, but as opposed to any other child with a similar diagnosis. So all the symptoms that they have that are common to the disease or common to the diagnosis, all of them are not very interesting to me. I'm most interested in what makes that kid unique. What are they sensitive to that's unusual? What are they interested in? Like one kid I've got who's just passionate about NASCAR. That's all he'll talk about. All he wants to watch on the television. He has this single subject and he knows everything about it. And so that's his special, whilst it's not completely unusual for autistic kids to become interested in a single topic. His topic and the way he's interested in it is unique to him. He's very interested in winning. So he wants to, if he plays a game, he wants to win. He has to win, actually. And he's with the NASCAR, with how he looks at what interests him in the topic is who are the winners. So we then take that information along with the general information about the child, what kind of, you know, things they like to eat or drink, what they don't like, how their evolution is, how they've developed as people in terms of their learning. I want to know everything, and where the parents feel that things are most need attention, what is most awry. And so I then work that up and find a remedy that matches.
So you just go, it's really just like any other treatment in a way.
Any other, literally any other. The only difference is that with the autistic children, it's essential the parents are getting other support. You know, with some complaints, you can sort of say, okay, I think, let's see what homeopathy does. You know, your kid might not need anything else, you know, for the, I don't know, chronic sinusitis or ADD even. But with autism, the children, the parents who use other, like the dietary, paying attention to diet, like occupational or speech therapy, or even some of the therapeutic techniques for handling the child. They're all very helpful. They will all enhance the general health and well-being.
So what do you do when, you know, this population, the parents, first of all, the parents are highly anxious. I've had, do you find it better if you're treating the parents as well?
Only if they want to.
Yeah, so you haven't, do you have whole families you treat that way?
Some, if they want to. I don't, I understand the anxiety personally. I think that it makes a lot of sense to me. There's I mean, they're very demanding. They can be very demanding, the children, right?
Yes, very.
Yes, so they're high maintenance in a major way, and it's exhausting.
Right.
So, I see my role as being supportive of the choices they make. It's same as all patients. So, supporting as much as possible what they're doing and how they're doing it, and encouraging, because the homeopath, as a homeopath, I'm in their lives, their child's life, relatively infrequently. You know, I might see a kid every month or two. That's all. So it makes sense for them to be doing something regular in between.
So a lot of people, I'm sure, come in and they're trying millions of different things with their kids, you know, supplements and, you know, even chelation, things like that. How,
yes.
What do you say?
I tend, the chelation, that's quite heavy therapy. I will tend to recommend that people do that and then come to me. Otherwise, it's not clear what's doing what, and I don't want to overload a child with too much, you know, disturbance. You know, I mean, it's enough already. The chelation is enough already. One big therapeutic input is enough at a time. And so the parents need to find out whether that's working or not.
Right.
And if it is, they stick with this. And if it isn't, they come back to see me a bit sooner than they had planned, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever seen chelation cause a problem?
It can be tough on the kid.
Right.
I think it can cause quite, you know, the detoxing can be quite unpleasant.
Right.
Yeah.
What about all the supplements and stuff?
I'm always feel mixed about supplements as a homeopath. So I think that the attention to the diet is very important. And I've lost a word. What is
the gluten-free, casein-free, GF, you know, that gluten.
Casein-free, exactly.
Yeah.
That's very helpful. That really works for a lot of kids. It has made a huge difference in a significant number of kids that I've seen.
Because, you know, the food allergies are sort of a maintaining cause in their case.
Right.
Although in my personal experience, but others as well, over time, those food sensitivities do go away, but it can take a long time.
Because they're sensitivities and not allergies. And there's a lot of confusion about the two. So a food allergy is where you have a very strong, maybe even life-threatening reaction to food, shellfish, or eggs, you know, where people eat it and they swell up, or they, you know, they get hives or something very bad, they vomit, you know. And a food sensitivity is quite different. This is where the body is generally has their allergic tendency is switched on in general, and eating too much of one food will set it off. So then stopping that food for a goodly period of time, usually 3 to 6 months, that reaction to that food will go away, and that person can usually tolerate small amounts of that food thereafter, or even large amounts if they've had some good homeopathy. But yes, I quite agree with you. So supplements, just to answer your question about that, is a different. Some supplements are very strong medicine, and I have seen people of all ages and sizes react badly, you know, get an initial good response and then carry on taking it, and it's been an overload, especially where there are megadoses involved. So I do, it's not my area of expertise, but I do encourage parents to apply homeopathic principles when taking or giving supplements to their kids, and just to reevaluate them, get an expert in on the job, make sure that they're correct, and to have gaps from time to time, a week, a month, or something like that, so that they can see if there's an improvement, whether there is one.
Right, and after being treated, they may not need the supplements anymore either.
Hopefully not.
Because it's a bit of an allopathic way of thinking as well, you know. It's not antipathic, but it's like saying it's different than the homeopathic way of thinking. But I guess it can help if there really is a deficiency. At least.
Yeah, if the child isn't eating, if they're missing major food groups, then it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But even so, megadoses, they're tricky. We don't really know what children can tolerate, and some things will cause problems. You know, zinc affects the nervous system. Well, think about, you know, all you have to do is go online and read about the side effects of any single substance in any multivitamin to see how it can cause problems.
Right. I've heard of some homeopaths, and I don't agree with this, giving zinc like a vitamin, you know, the homeopathic zinc like a vitamin. To these
a regular
kids.
Basis?
Yes, like 30C every day.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. So don't do it, everybody.
please don't do that.
You wouldn't believe this stuff that people are doing out there, actually.
I would, actually, and it makes me feel like crying, literally. You know, homeopathy. There's a lot of misunderstandings. There's a lot of myths and misunderstandings about how it works and how people can use it. And because it is available over the counter with so little direction, you know, people are encouraged to take a homeopathic remedy without any idea of how long for, or you know, they make a lot of people are making it up as they go along, and they're not doing a very good job.
Right. Have you ever treated any older children with autism?
Haven't. I've only seen the young ones, either very young or sort of 8, 9, 10 year olds.
But even have you had any success with kids who are like 8, 9, or 10?
Yes. I mean, and it's a process. So healing is always a process. With a deep-seated disease like autism, you're going from one step to the next. I mean, and the first major improvement that I always see is an improvement in their general health and well-being. A lot of the autistic kids come in with history of chronic bronchitis or sinusitis, or you know, they've had one infection after another. And the infections are usually being managed with antibiotics or antibiotics and steroids.
Yeah, maybe you could kind of give a description of the kind of progress you might see in a successful case, maybe an example or something like that.
So, I see kids who come in with, like I said, with the chronic complaints, and the first thing that happens is that they are easier in themselves. The regular monthly infections, or more often sometimes, ease up. They're now not having to take, their doctors have taken them off their allergy medicines. You know, within usually 3 to 6 months, they're off, you know, regular courses of antibiotics. If they get them once a year, an infection that needs antibiotics once a year, that's about the maximum in kids that I've seen long term. So that's very nice right there. Their health is better, and that means that they're more present in their lives. Then they connect. Because the biggest heartbreaker with the autistic kids is that they're in a world of their own and they're not connecting. And then if the remedies are working well, the next thing I see is that they begin connecting with other people on the planet. Usually, you know, their families. And they begin to, you know, branch out a little bit in school or other social situations. maybe it's sort of parallel play, but it's still beginning. And then after that, just their general learning developments. Because often physically they're hampered. They can't do things. I've seen 7-year-olds who couldn't ride a bicycle, for example, and after the first remedy, they got on the bike and rode it.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
Yeah.
And in fact, that particular kid that I'm thinking of was almost, the parents were so grateful and happy. I mean, that was almost more than they could have hoped for. That was enough for them.
Yeah, because there was more normalcy.
Yes.
Have you seen any particular ingredients in the successful cases, something that you think was somehow a key or a pattern for your successful
cases? The only key pattern or key ingredient is that I get one or more symptoms that identify that are unique to this child as opposed to any others with autism. If all the symptoms are common, then it's much harder for me, and I'm guessing a bit. You know, I'm trying this remedy and that remedy until I hit the right one, and then the parents have got to be patient.
So the parents can help you by finding that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there isn't much. You know, we all work together. Sometimes the kid needs to get sicker before something unique pops up. Obviously, if I can't elicit it through questioning, I hope that my questions will stimulate the parents to think about it. But you talked about the anxiety of the parents. There's a way in which the parents of autistic children have been given or have gotten, both gotten and been given, a tremendous amount of information. So a lot of, it's really hard for them to separate out when talking to a homeopath, talking to me, tell me about your child, they want to tell me about the autistic child in general. And it can take quite some time for people to get in the groove of looking for what we need, the homeopaths need, as opposed to their doctors.
Right. I'm sure they'll come in and say, oh, you did this test and that test, and here's the results.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's why I also encourage people to, to read my book and stuff. They'll understand more what...
Yeah, your book is brilliant in that regard. Absolutely brilliant, because it clearly delineates where children, what is unusual or unique that leads the homeopath to select, a brilliant prescription.
Yeah. So we're almost out of time, but before we go, is there any one thing that you would like to tell parents who are listening about homeopathy, about how their children can be helped? Is, some kind of message to them?
Just don't give up. There's hope out there. And, the only message I've got really is the tremendous empathy that I have for all the parents with autistic children. My heart just goes out to all parents who are struggling with an autistic child in their families. I think that more is good. Reaching out, the more that you can do, parents can do to, to get help for their children, actually it pays off. It pays off. It's not a bad thing to try this and that and see what works, and then, to put together like a dream team, that works for their child and their child's needs and their family. Whether that's chelation and occupational therapy, or this year maybe it'll be homeopathy and speech therapy and a little play therapy, you know, like that. But to, and dietary, pay attention to diet and toxins. Get them out of your homes. That's my biggest message. Get the toxins out of your homes.
It's a very incremental thing. It's a slow process. Even in my son's case, it was slow. It was very gradual.
How long did it take, Amy?
In a way, we were so lucky because it was the early days, and I wasn't confused by a lot of information because there was no information.
Right.
So I just, you know, the first couple years were like 80%.
Right.
And all we did was homeopathy, some osteopathy, and some diet. And I kind of did Reiki myself on him, too.
So the osteopathy, was it cranial stuff?
Yeah.
That's very helpful. I've seen that work, and Reiki work really beautifully.
Yeah.
Because it works at a subconscious, you know, unconscious level.
Yeah.
And it's a very nice healing input.
Right. I think it really boosts the homeopathy.
Yeah, absolutely. That complementary, beautifully complementary.
And then after that, you know, things were more or less normal, but then I really felt it took another 5-6 years till I felt everything was completely resolved, you know, that there were no vestiges, you know.
Right.
So, and that was an ideal case, you know. So, oh yeah, he also had the first year speech and language therapy.
Uh-huh. There you go. You see?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you did quite a lot, and it paid off.
Yeah.
But it took a long time, and that's what parents have got to do. It's a long haul. Just remember that there are lots of us out here sending everybody lots of love and encouragement.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to...
Thank you for inviting me, Amy.
Yeah, I'm going to pause this, and then I'll come and say goodbye. Hold on, okay?
Okay.
Okay, well, that's about all we have time for today. Just to remind you to go to impossiblecure.com, also the National Center for Homeopathy.org, and find out about the conference. Go to the conference. Also, I'm not sure I mentioned last time, there's a new Yahoo group. I remember the old Homeopathy SNC Yahoo group died, but there's a new one that's been begun. Not much has happened with it yet, but I encourage you to go and sign up, and maybe some activity will happen. It's a Yahoo group discussion list about homeopathy for autistic kids or other special needs kids, and that is homeopathy-and-sn. So homeopathy-and-sn, Yahoo group. And finally, Miranda asked me to let you know, remind you once again, her website is mirandacastro.com, and she says she does not do phone consultations over the phone. So if you're interested in seeing her, she only sees patients in person. So that's it for today. And be well, and remember, there really is hope with homeopathy.